Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Naoki Takahashi, a Japanese restaurant in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Food Without Borders, a show about food, politics, and identity. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and we are in the Heritage Radio Network studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today, my guest in studio is Chef Saul Montiel. He was born in Atotonilco El Grande, a small town outside the city of Pachuca in central Mexico. He's the executive chef of Cantina Rooftop in Manhattan and La Unica in Atotonilco El Grande, Mexico. Welcome to the show, Chef Saul Montiel.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Do you prefer to be called Chef Saul, Chef Montiel, Saul? What's your preference?
Saul is fine.
Saul is fine. Okay. Well, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming out on this incredibly frigid evening.
My pleasure. I love this place.
You love Roberta's?
Yeah, I come here at least once a month with my daughters.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you live near here?
No, I live in Staten Island.
Oh, okay.
But I love the
pizza. So you must really love it because you really make that trek.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy you're here and thank you for taking the night off work. So let's get into it. So you were born, like I said, and you helped me with the pronunciation, Atotonilco El Grande. And I know you primarily grew up there. What was your childhood like there?
Well, I grew up with my mom. She was a single mother. My dad passed away when I was 3 years old. Mm. So I grew up in a house of a single mother and three other siblings. So it was very hard, you know, because we didn't have everything we needed to grow up.
How did you manage? I mean, what was it like? I mean, for your mom, I'm sure, trying to feed four hungry children. Did you start cooking with her at a young age to help out?
Well, actually, when I was, you know, as I was growing up, I was, you know, seeing my mom struggling, you know, putting food on the table. At the age of 9, I started working.
Wow.
Like a part time on a fruit market. So I was selling like apples, oranges. I was like,
do you remember that?
Yeah, because I was having so much fun.
You were having so much fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to sell oranges, apples, watermelons.
It does sound like a cool job for a kid.
Yeah.
Even though probably that wouldn't fly here in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, that's very normal in Mexico.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. What kind of dishes do you remember growing up with? I'm assuming your mom probably cooked a lot for all of you.
Well, I remember my favorite thing. So many famous dishes that she used to make, but I remember when she used to make tortillas, like a la minute, I used to love it. Have the fresh corn tortilla with sea salt. That was my favorite thing to
eat. Just plain with fresh sea salt?
Yeah, it's delicious.
That sounds so good.
It's just like eating fresh bread, you know?
When
it comes out of the oven, it's just you just want to eat a lot.
But. Yeah. When did you start cooking? Were you pretty young?
Well, like I say, I started working at a very early age, and I started helping my mom a lot, like cleaning tomatoes, cutting meat, dicing jalapenos, washing dishes. So from the age of 9 to 15, I was always in the kitchen. Always.
And it sounds like you were really sort of learning the foundation of what it was like to be in a restaurant, even in your home.
Yeah, exactly. It was part of my routine. Like, if I wanted to do something, I have to earn it. Like, if I wanted to go play soccer, I have to wash the dishes, clean the bathrooms, go buy the groceries. So I started working at a very early age.
Yeah.
And you left when you were 15, right?
Yeah, almost 16, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you go on your own, or what made you make that decision?
Well, basically, you know, as we come from a very poor family, so I see a lot of people, like Mexicans, going back home from the United States and wearing really cool jeans, shoes, having a lot of money, trucks. So I was like, I wanted to...
When they came back to visit,
yeah,
they had those things.
So, like, I wanted to be like them. And, yeah. And I don't know, I guess seeing my mom always working, I kind of wanted to go that way and towards going to school. So at the age of almost 16, I decided to come back to the States. I met a friend, and I crossed the border when I was 16, almost 16 years old.
What was that experience like?
I was very excited. Mm-hmm. I wasn't afraid. Why? I don't know. I don't know why I was afraid, but now I'm afraid to cross it.
Yeah.
But I guess I was very ambitious. I wanted to help my mom, my siblings. And the only thing that was on my head crossing the border, it was finding a job that I can help my family back home.
Was it... I mean, was there anything treacherous about crossing the border?
Yeah, well, basically, we walk for like 3 nights and maybe 2 days. We run out of water. I remember drinking water where, you know, where the cows and horses drink water.
Sure.
So I used to like, put my shirt under so I can get all the dust away, and then I will drink water from there. Not only me, it's me and probably six others. And... we ran out of food, so we had to, you know, just struggle, like wait until we cross. And we crossed in the desert in Arizona, and then we took a train. And by that train, there was like a cargo train. Basically, they were full of cows, of animals, so you had to jump on it. So a lot of people in the past, what I hear is that they fell and then... They cut their legs, their arms, whatever. Yeah, I think that was the only scared part that I was scared of, falling out of the train.
Yeah, but you made it, and your friends made it.
We made it, yeah. But I had to jump out of the train. I remember because it was this guy. He was like 12 years old. He got behind, so we all jumped onto the cargo train, and we look back, and the guy is like running after us. So we decide to jump back. So we
had to do it again.
Yeah, and we all hit ourselves, you know, like arms and legs. It was pretty rough. So what we did after that is like, you know what? Now you, since you're the youngest, why you go first?
Yeah.
After, because we didn't want to leave anybody behind.
Yeah, I mean, that I can see from your perspective, like when you were so young, that was all, you know, probably an adrenaline rush at the time because you were too young to have. Like adult anxieties about it. But I'm sure like looking back, you must be like, oh my God, I can't believe that I did that.
Yeah. Now that I have two daughters.
Yeah.
And I think I'm like, I will never let my daughter go through that.
Right.
You know, but something that I admire about my mom is that she believed in me. She trusted me. So she's like, listen, I'm going to let you go.
She didn't try and stop you.
Yeah. She's like, I'm not going to stop you. You know, I went through some of me. She told me this. I went through something with my parents. They never believed in me. So I want to believe in you. Mm. So you better get it together and do the right thing. She told me to stay away from drugs, to be a good man, a good citizen. And so far, I think I am. Sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of the time I am.
So how did you, what happened when you got to the United States? How did you land on your feet?
So I started working in San Jose, California. So I was doing a little bit of landscaping, painting, construction. I didn't really like it because it wasn't really, I wasn't feel any connection to what I was doing. Like I wasn't happy doing it. So I find out they had some parents, some members of my family in New York. And by that time I was making like $180 a week in San Jose. And if I will take a trip to New York, I will make $220 a week. And I don't have to pay lunch. In California, I have to pay lunch because in New York, if I work, I will be working on kitchen, so I will never have to pay for food.
Right.
So I was like, I did my math. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to take a trip to New York.
And you knew at that point, too, you already wanted to work in a kitchen?
No.
No?
No. I hated it. When I first moved to New York, I hated it.
Oh, you really just did it for the free lunch?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you live in San Jose, California, You know, you have a lot of nice gardens, a lot of nice houses, a lot of weather. It's much nicer than here. So when I moved, when I got here, I was living in Harlem. So Harlem, 20 years ago, it wasn't a good area. So I was afraid of my life, you know, sometimes because there were so many gangs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't really like it. So, but then I started working in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that was like the bright part. The first day, I didn't like it either because I hated it. I remember they told me I was going to wash dishes. No one told me it was going to be at night, overnight.
Right.
So picture yourself. You're 50, you're almost 16 years old, and you walk into the kitchen at 9 o'clock, at midnight, everybody leaves. You're the only one there. So I was doing a porter job. I was supposed to clean the entire kitchen. I didn't know. Yeah. So they gave me all these chemicals, like degreasers and some other, you know, cleaning supplies, and I didn't know how to use them. So I jumped on top of the stove, and I started spraying the degreaser, right? And as I was spraying the degreaser, it was folding in on my arms. So we start itching, and I look around, and no one's there. So I started crying. because I'm like, oh, I didn't sign for this. This is not what I want, blah, blah, blah. But I had to finish it because, you know, you had to do it because, you know, that's part of my job. So the next morning I went to my chef and be like, hey, listen, I want to work. I love the kitchen, but I just, that's not something that I wanted to do. And I asked him, what can I do? He's like, listen, just focus on learning, like learn a lot. And I'm like, how can I do it? He's like, just come earlier. You know, don't expect anything like paying for it. I come 3 hours earlier and eventually you will get a chance. So I did. I came 3, 4, 5 hours earlier. And I end up saving money because if I come earlier, I don't have to buy lunch.
Yeah.
So I was learning, and the guys that I was working with, they were very excited to see me because I was doing their job. Mm. So I was like, you know, but I was so excited. And one time, one of the salad guys didn't show up because he went out and, you know, got drunk, whatever. So the chef got angry and said, listen, you don't want the job.
Were.
Yeah, so like, you want it? I'm like,
it was only a matter of time.
Please. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, so this is like an investment. That to me is an investment. You invest in learning and eventually you will get positions and money.
I mean, that's what school is, right?
Yeah.
That's what you were doing.
Yeah, but I was more focused on learning.
Uh-huh.
The cooking. And what I do best is Italian, even though I'm Mexican.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was how you made your way from being a dishwasher to getting behind the line.
Yes, and then it went like that.
And then there you go. Well, before we get to that part, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back to continue. Well,
sounds cool.
This episode is brought to you by Naoki Takahashi, a restaurant in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan. When you dine at Naoki Takahashi, you'll feel like you've been transported to Japan. Sample a little bit of everything with kaiseki menus, or let Chef Naoki lead the way with his omakase menu. A la carte and vegetarian dishes are also available. Learn more at naokitakahashi.com. That's NAOKITAKAHASHI.com.
Hey, you are listening to Food Without Borders on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and I'm in studio talking with Chef Saul Montiel. Hey, Chef.
How are you?
Welcome back. Very well. So you just told us the story of coming to the United States from Mexico and starting to work as a dishwasher in restaurants and then kind of just being a diligent, hard worker, getting yourself up there. To the point where you were cooking. And I know you mentioned you were cooking a lot of Italian food, working in a lot of different Italian restaurants.
Yes.
So how did you make the transition going from Italian food, coming back, I guess, full circle to Mexican food?
Well, I've been cooking Italian food for the past, I will say, 15 years. And I really loved it. I love it because it's very similar to a Mexican food because it's all about grandma's food, you know? Like, if you go to Mexico, it's all about grandma's food. If you go to Italy, it's all about grandma's
food. Sure, yeah.
So, you know, they play with pasta, we play with masa, You know what I'm saying? Like, they make different shapes of pasta. We make different shapes of tortillas.
Had you ever had Italian food before you came to New York?
No, never. No, mm-hmm. never. No, no, nothing.
But did you feel like when you had it for the first time, where you're like, okay, like I get this. This reminds me of other things I've had.
Yeah, I really like it because of the simplicity mm-hmm. of how of the simplicity and the quality of the ingredients. So I felt like it was really easy and fun to play with. Mm-hmm. So I loved it.
And really tasty.
Really tasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point did you make that transition, though? Because Cantina, obviously, is Mexican.
So basically, I work under a lot of celebrity chefs like Sarah Jenkins, Amanda Freitag, Anne Burrell, some others. And I don't know. I feel like I was doing something that it's not really who I am. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because when you see a Mexican chef cooking Italian food, you're just like, there's a disconnection right there, right? It's not that often. So I decided to learn how to make Mexican food because that's what I grew up eating. So when did I start making?
But you already probably had a lot of the fundamentals down just from cooking as a young person.
I wasn't really cooking. I was more like a prep guy.
Yeah,
So I knew what a good tomatillo was. I know what a good poblano was because of my mom told me what ingredients she wanted all the time. But I just felt like at one point in my life, I felt like I was disconnected from my culture, like who I was and who I was becoming. So I stopped doing Italian and decided to do Mexican because, you know, I love it.
Yeah. And do you think part of that came from like you just missing where you came from and wanting to feel connected to it again?
Yeah, but I think so, yeah. Because, you know, on my days off when I was cooking Italian food, I was always eating Mexican. Always, yeah. always, no matter what. And I as growing up in New York, we always miss the part of our culture, the food, which is a very important part of Mexican culture.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest.
Did it fulfill something for you, like being able to helm a Mexican restaurant? Did you feel like a sense of yourself coming back?
Yeah, I feel like it was. No, I didn't feel like I was home, but I felt happy eating Mexican food, like eating chicharrón with salsa. It was just, it's like taking me away from the city and eating that food. It make me feel good.
Yeah, and is the food at Central Mexico? Is it inspired by food that you ate growing up? Is it inspired by the region of Central Mexico that you came from?
The food that I'm cooking at Cantina?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Basically, we're focusing on Central of Mexico. It's a lot of homemade tortillas, tacos, quesadillas, moles. So it's more focused on Central of America, of Mexico.
And you also took over your grandparents' restaurant, is that right?
No, not really, but there is a little story behind it.
Okay.
So, my grandma, she opened a restaurant called La Única, which stands for the only one. She was the only restaurant at the town. I'm talking about 60 years ago, probably 70 years ago. So it was the only restaurant. So they opened another one in my town. So they had two restaurants. And they have, I believe, 11 children. And none of them decide to keep running the restaurant. So my grandparents passed away and no one wanted to keep doing the restaurants. So I had a dream that I wanted to go back home one day and open a restaurant, but I opened my mom's restaurant, my grandma's restaurant, because I grew up there. And in last year, 2017, I was applying for my green card. I went to get my visa and I got denied. I couldn't come back to the States because I say something wrong. And even though I commit to do something, I just said I did something. And then they were like, oh, just because you said it, you came back. You can't go back to the States for 6 months. So my wife was pregnant at the time. She was 8 months.
Here?
Yeah, here in the States. And I had a 2.5-year-old daughter. So I went back to get my visa to fix my status, and then they don't let me back, right? So I
this was just last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Take your time. We can change the subject too if you'd rather do that.
No, it's okay. So I couldn't come back to the States, and I was, worried because I had to take care of my wife, my daughter, my future daughter.
Yeah, that sounds really, really tough.
So.
It's okay. Well, I'm glad to know, skipping to the ending, that you're here.
Yeah, you know the fight.
Yeah, you so know, good spoiler alert.
You know the ending. So I couldn't come back to the stage, right? So for 6 months, and I didn't know what to do because my wife was pregnant. I had to pay all these bills, and, you know, I'm like, oh, my God. So I was trying to work in Mexico. I couldn't work because they needed me to sign a contract for like a year or 2 years. So I was just going to stay there for 6 months because my family is in New York. So I'm like, oh, what should I do? I was thinking to immigrate to Canada and work there because, you know, they pay good and lifestyle is better there. So I was just going all over the place. And one night, I started looking at my Instagram from years ago, and I was looking at all the pictures. I was like, man, I've been doing consulting. I've been helping friends. I used to own a restaurant when I was 27 years old. I mean, like, why can't I open my own restaurant in my own town? So that night I couldn't sleep. It was like 5:30 in the morning. My mom, she wakes up at 5. So I went downstairs because she has a little restaurant. And I went up to her, my mom, what about if I open a restaurant? Because I need to provide for my family. I need to do something. And she's like, yeah, of course. You know, you're my son. You're always there for me. Now I'm here for you, whatever you need. So I'm like, okay, good. So I felt really good. I felt that excitement that I always...
You had a plan.
Yeah, that I always have when I work in New York. Like, I had the excitement of opening up a place and putting it together. And I went up to my sister. And I was like, hey, listen, hey, what about if I open a restaurant? And she's like, yeah, of course. You know, you're always there for us. Like, it's time for us to support you and to be part of this. So the restaurants didn't exist. Like, my grandma's restaurants didn't exist anymore because they were all old. So we found a place, and I call it La Única now. So I opened my grandparents' restaurant used to be. And it was a mix of both worlds, like the American world and the Mexican. So I put a menu together, Mexican and American. And now it's been a year and 2 months old. La Única in my hometown.
So it's almost like the reverse of Cantina. It's like you took what you knew from America and then put it there instead of taking what you were drawing upon from America, from Mexico, and incorporating it into the menu at Cantina.
Yes, basically that's what it is.
And you were able to come back.
Yeah,
to the States.
I got my visa. My wife, she was very supportive at the time, and she's still very supportive. Mm. She was checking. She was checking online every day to see if they already approved the visa. And one of these days, she saw it and she called me. She's like, hey, listen, you got approved. I was like, oh, I wanted to scream. But at the time, I was in a classroom with a bunch of parents because I went to my niece, like a parent reunion. So I went there and I couldn't scream and yell, but I was so happy.
You were screaming on the inside.
And then I came back to the States. And I was like, you know, I was so happy. I was like, oh, man, life sucks sometimes, but not all the time.
Yeah, that's well said.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole issue of, you know, what's happening in our country in terms of immigration and just the way, you know, it's so difficult for people to come since Trump's been in office is obviously really personal and really emotional for you. I mean, how does it feel to be now that you're back in the United States kind of just bearing witness to, like, this whole, you know, build the wall and the way the Trump administration is, like, referring to Mexicans in all these really derogatory ways? I mean, do you feel like you really want to still be here?
I mean, I don't see America as my own country now, even though I'm no citizen yet, but I'll become soon. I don't think it kind of has something to deal with Donald Trump a little bit, but not all the way, because we had all these issues since the past, since Bill Clinton, since George W. Bush, since Obama. So I think right now what Donald Trump is doing is enforcing the law, and he's been mean because he's taking a decision based on two or three things. Like, you can do that. You can judge people or entire country because of few people. You know, I think that's not fair.
What would you say to him if he came?
What would I say to
him? If he tried to eat in your restaurant? I don't know if he'd be allowed to stay or not.
I would cook for him. I'll be very happy to cook for him, you know, so mm-hmm. he can see what we're doing in the States. You know,
well, that's powerful.
We're not raping anybody. We don't do with drugs. We deal with food and we make a lot of people happy, and I'll be more than happy to cook for him.
Yeah.
Just like I am to cook for anybody. I just disagree with him in a lot of things, but that doesn't mean I should be mean to him.
Well, you're not a mean person like he is.
It's easier to be nice.
Yeah, that's well said, too.
It's nicer, too.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like you've had experiences where you've been able to kind of teach people through your food? Have you ever encountered someone who felt like perceived you or, you know, other Mexican people in a certain way, and then they were able to, like, talk to you and eat your food, and they had their feelings, you know, just shifted after that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was cooking Italian food, you know, like a lot of customers, well, they would be like, oh, I would like to meet the chef. And then I come upstairs, some Mexican chef, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And like, oh my God, really? You just cooked this? I'm like, yeah, and that's my favorite pasta, matriciana. And I can see they didn't expect a Mexican.
Sure.
So there's a lot of people like me, a lot of Spanish people, Latino, we're doing a lot of great things, and we're changing, we are showing the world that we are more than what Donald Trump thinks about us by being a sample, you know, by doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, Sal, it was so wonderful to have you here, and thank you for being so open and telling us your story. Tell us where we can come find you at the restaurant and eat your food.
Yes, well, basically we have two locations now. One is, they're both in the same building, 605 West 48th Street, Cantina Rooftop, and Cantina 48 now.
Okay. And that rooftop it's all about summertime, right?
Yeah, summer in spring too.
Yeah.
I mean, right now on winter, we do a lot of events, so you can have the view of the sky. So it's pretty good. But on summer, in spring, it gets pretty crazy, so you better make a reservation.
Okay, we have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and thanks everyone for listening, and check us out again next week, Wednesday at 6, or find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and here, heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.